Bless up for tuning in to Project Cheney. Magic happens when you question everything. Conspirituality becomes reality, weirdness is welcomed, and it's okay to change your mind. Big up yourself.
Big up yourself. Welcome back to another episode of Project Cheney. As always, I'm Cheney, and you are a fucking survivor. Yeah, you survive pandemics, and you survive comets, and you survive Tom Hanks, and you've survived another week in the New World Order. It's time to accept it. We are not trying to wake people up to where we are actually at any longer. We are in it. You are here and you are surviving it every day. And you are helping me survive it by making me show up and yammer my face off at you. So, thanks for joining me, survivors. It feels all right, right? You know, like, when you shut your eyes and you really picture shit hitting the fan. This has been so boring. So boring. At least that's good, right? Boring's good. If your family's healthy, you got food on the table and hopefully a warm bed to sleep in, boring is okay sometimes. We all survived the holidays. We have made it all the way to 2022. We are comfortably settled into January. We have listened to insurrection talk all over the news. We have talked about Betty White's 100th birthday. You know, speaking of birthdays, today is Mac Miller's 30th birthday. I love Mac Miller. If you guys are even close to a hip-hop fan, you should totally check him out. All the albums are such a different feel and a different vibe. And some of them even, you know, lean romantic and sexy. And some of them are just a good time driving fun. And some of them are, you can go on a run to. I love it. If you haven't already, please check out some Mac Miller for yourself. Do it for yourself. Maybe I'll even put some Mac Miller in the intro somewhere. I don't know. Maybe not. Let me not get ahead of myself. Let me not get ahead of myself. Oh, what else, you guys? As I scream from far away into the microphone so I can crack my back. I have Human Vibration hanging out in a conversation for you guys today. I'm super excited to bring it to you. Is life looking up for you guys? What's the energy like in the year? The weather, I'm lucky. Another reason I'm very lucky to be in Florida is I do suffer a bit of seasonal depression. Winter is hard on me every year, and I do believe I need the sunshine. I don't like cold weather. I do not like my feet being cold at all. I am not ashamed to say, and there is hundreds of people out there that can vouch for this. I lived in Oregon and I didn't like cold so much that I got to a place that, yeah, sometimes I was just going to wear my robe to the grocery store. I didn't understand why robes weren't more in fashion. It kept my knees warm. Yeah, my pea coat was a little thicker, but my robe, I just wanted my knees to be warm. And most of the jackets, they go right above your knee. I need a longer coat. My knees get so cold. I have bony knees. Even in my heavier days, I'm a bony person. Like, I have bony knees and bony hips. I have a bony butt. And it gets cold when you're bony in places. Unfortunately, my stomach, it stays totally warm. I have a very warm stomach. It's insulated. It's like insulated for all my organs. It's comfortable in there. But I am in Florida, and so I am very grateful. And if you are out there, and you might not even know you have seasonal depression, but it is something you should look into, something you should start keeping track on your calendar if you notice that you're kind of in this blah way, and it just seems to be a layer that gets thicker and thicker. When I lived in the Pacific Northwest, I didn't realize that the 3 month summer of this phenomenal, fairy tale-ic, dreamy weather that happens there, I didn't realize every year that 3 months wasn't enough for me to fill up. So, you know, let's say my first year in Oregon after the summertime, by the time fall sets in, I'm at like 90% of myself. But the second year after summer, after I fill up from that shitty winter again and fall starts again, I'm only at like 60% of myself. And as the winters go on, it takes more and more of a toll that I just imagine for me. I eventually lost who I was. I didn't even realize the like malaise that had been laid over part of my personality until I came back to the sunshine. So it's just, you know, maybe you're not into tanning beds, and I'm not like a person that says go tanning all the time, but maybe sometimes go tanning. If you are in a dark place with cloud cover, go a tanning. Get yourself one of those plant lights and sit under it. Put some tropical plants under it and sit next to that plant. Meditate. Give yourself some warm vibes. A fire pit isn't enough. That's nighttime stuff. You need some daytime stuff. And sometimes I know in the Pacific Northwest, and I also know Michigan, you know, the sun doesn't come out for days and days and days and days and days at a time, that you almost get this black and white life. The color leaves your life. And you don't even realize how important and necessary that color is until it starts to come back. And the daffodils are like, hey, girl. And the tulips are like, hey, boo. Yeah, that's why spring is so beautiful. It needs to be. It needs to be. You better cherry blossom me. You better cherry blossom me, Washington, D.C., because you just done giving me some cold as a weather for months. And humans do not have fur. We're not made for that, unless you're the QAnon shaman. JK, JK. Oh, what else is happening in the world? I've watched a couple of movies. I took in The Internals finally. If you listen, you know I'm a comic book nerd. And I know this movie got a little bit of hate. I loved it. I loved it. If you watch it and you know me, you'd know why I love it. They have characters like Athena, which she's based on like Athena, the warrior goddess. They have characters like Gilgamesh. They have characters like Druid. They have characters like Sprite. And they lay it all that these are like these eternal energies that get put down on Earth to help with the evolution of human history. I don't want to give any of the movie away, but it's interesting, the lore and stories and everything that becomes from these superheroes. And you can already guess some of the lore and stories just by their names. Like one of the heroes' names is Icarus. So if you're a person that you don't think you're into superheroes, but maybe you have kids or a man or a lady or somebody that is in your life, but you are into history enough, you might really enjoy this. I liked how the CGI actually, it was just super cool to me, because the seven wonders of the world, some of them are depicted in this movie. And just to see something like, you know, the ancient gardens done in full CGI is pretty fucking cool. So, yeah, whatever, you know, it's all fake. It's all Disney. It's all, made by my Hollywood brainwashing wand, but I did enjoy it. I watched Bedknobs and Broomsticks. I took in a little Manchurian Candidate. I have been taking in a lot more TV than I maybe do normally. Almost like I'm imbibing on movies and television. I find that it's mostly old movies. Like I'm watching stuff with a new sense and being and tools of discernment and taking them in that way. But The Eternals was new and I enjoyed it. I watched Spider-Man. I did not enjoy that as much. I know everybody else talked about it and everything, but it just kind of felt like a, you can fill something with a whole bunch of nostalgia and that doesn't make good movie to me. It almost felt like the animated, what was it? The Amazing Spider-Man, the animated one, the multiverse was better than this. And this was kind of like a cheap knockoff of that. Not obviously not a cheap knockoff. It was live action. And usually the live action is supposed to be better, but the multiverse Spider-Man was just so good. It was so good. Yeah, that's another one to totally watch and take in. The storyline's so great. The voices are great. So if you have kids or somebody in your life that likes comic books, check it out. That one I would totally vouch for and stand by and say this is a great movie, even if you're not into superheroes. What else? What else? Oh my gosh. You guys, I have been binge watching the new L Word. It is the Q generation, but it has nothing to do with that. Ironically enough, it's the Q generation. If you are a lesbian and listen to this show, and I would say a lesbian because I don't imagine a lot of straight people are taking in the L word. Now, this being said, there are a few of you women out there who have gay friends or who have just binge watched every show like it's 90210 or Melrose Place or something of that soap opera genre. So you've watched this too. There are those. Very few men have watched The L Word, which is kind of stunning. It's a pretty sexy show. There is way more feminine looking females on it than there are masculine females. But I would say there is somebody for everyone. Now, if you want to nerd out, you can go back to the original L Word and start from season one, episode one. And all those characters are worth knowing and the storylines are deep and it's a great show, blah, 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 blah. It loses me somewhere in it over that series. And then it goes away for a few years, maybe like 10 years. And then we come back. We have a couple of the same actresses from the first L Word. And then they've just added like a younger cast on top of it. And I don't think you need to watch the first series at all. I think you can just start with Generation Q. You guys, it is so good. And if you're like, you know, gay, not gay, I don't really care. I'll try a new show. Or just totally looking for something like brainless and entertaining. Like, you're not trying to do a dig. The symbolism is not intense. It is purely just drama and sex and Los Angeles. So, yeah, that's all I'll say about the L Word. And I cannot believe how much television and movies I have taken in the last few weeks. It's insanity. It's so different. I even was looking at my notes and I'm not even reading off my notes right now. I have no attachment to all these other deeper things because the movies and TV shows have made me slightly less, I don't know. Is it our hibernation time? Is it the time of year that is very normal for us to just coop up into a cave after we eat a whole bunch of Thanksgiving and Christmas feasts and hibernate? I feel like that a little bit. I have the sweetest, sweetest tooth. I am like not on my normal gummy bear phase. I'm eating full Danishes. I want croissants. I want starch, bread, jams, cheesecake pastries. Shit, man alive. I haven't exercised in so long and I know this is not great. I know. I sometimes wish that the recording was better so I could just take a walk and yammer why I walked. And if any of it was worth it, I would save it for you guys and just put it on here. I used to see grown-ups talking to themselves while they were walking. Oh, shit. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. I want to open this sheet of paper and just see if anything is worth it. It's like, I feel like the conversation that I have with HV, with Human Vibration, is so good that the whole time trying to think of the intro and what I was going to talk about it and contour for it and look into for it, it just kind of fell flat. Anyways, I'm not even going to open my paper today. Let's just talk about Luge for a second. So somewhere, there is something feasting on our love or our Luge. There's something feasting on our fear or our love. There's energy, spirit. To me personally, my philosophy is all of the dates from the sky clock, and it's whose clock we're really using. We don't really know whose clock we're using or who has the finite one. We assume with astrology, or we assume with astronomy, or we assume that NASA's going to tell us, or we assume Big Ben's correct. You know, I just think somewhere there is a clock and there is entities feasting off fear. And somewhere I think we are almost permanent batteries of love, like these infinite batteries of love. And probably the more empathetic you are, and probably the more pain you feel, and the deeper you are as a person, your battery is probably bigger. The more heartbreak you've experienced in your life, the deeper your well is. And all that well gets filled with a whole bunch of love. And then you become this battery they want to Luge. And maybe it's a Luge of they want to make you watch football teams and have anxiety and sit at the edge of your seat and root against another city or wish a guy gets hurt on the field. Or maybe they Luge you by making you watch horror movies and making you see fear where you never saw fear before, like in the water or in a dog named Cujo. Maybe they Luge you by every 11 o'clock news, they show a same depiction of a same color person just so that if you walk on the street and see that color person, you automatically have fear of them. Maybe they create a whole super virus and tell you that the end is nigh and doom, doom, doom and fear, fear, fear. And Human Vibration gets into this a little bit. And she gets into the idea of just for the first time ever in humanity, we all thought we were sick at the same time. As I'm starting to say this, I'm like, oh my gosh. Is that the conversation I had with Human Vibration, or is it the conversation I had with John Paul Rice, or is it both? It seems like it could be both. We're all in this together, surviving the New World Order. We're not fucking waking up to the New World Order. The New World Order is not on its way. The New World Order is not that comet that almost scraped by the world, you know, yesterday or whenever. The New World Order is on top of us. And not only is it on top of us, it's grown us. It's the soil we've all been raised in. What we crave, what we think, what we feel, what we love, what we hate, all has been very dictated and contoured and created to make us lose sight of something. What do they want us to lose sight of? What are they trying to convince us to lose sight of? Are you powerful? Are you an infinite energy source? Are you full of love? Are you expressing that love to the people around you? What are the fears that are keeping us up at night now? Like, you know that, like, one of the first ways to fix a problem is at first you have to admit there's a problem. Maybe we just all collectively have to admit to ourselves that we're living in the new world order, and we have been for a long time. Maybe no matter when you woke up, whether I can tout off that I woke up 20 years ago, or if you think you're late to the game because you woke up in 2020. Maybe the realization that we all need to have is that we've been living it in our whole lives and we're still surviving. We're still holding lines. We're still creating art. We're still making friendships. We're still falling in love. We still take the most evil things in the world, from the television to the computer to the iPhone, and we make them beautiful, amazing things. And I don't think any of this should be lost sight of. I think you should be proud of yourself. I think instead of picking dates and saviors and times and waiting on something to fucking happen, why don't you look in the fucking mirror and realize that you are surviving something? Take it in. You've survived to here. You've survived the new world order longer than you've realized. Stop being scared of it. It's like this matrix program they've stuck on us. And we're all like waiting for something to happen. Blue beam, waiting for something to happen. Election, waiting for something to happen. Arrest, waiting for something to happen. But what are you doing in your real life right now? Godzilla's gonna come. A comet's gonna hit us. Jesus is coming back. What are you doing right now? If that, whatever event, whether you're desperately waiting for it like it's the best event in the whole world that's going to happen, or if it keeps you up at night because you think it's going to be the worst thing, like an EMP, like an electromagnetic pulse is going to take out all the power, 10 days of darkness. Okay, then what? Most of you live in a place that you've survived natural disasters. You've survived the power being out from snow. You've survived the power being out from a storm. You've survived the power being out just because your state ran your government bad and you have to have brownouts because the Enron is what they tell you. You guys are surviving stuff every day. Everyone out there has survived somebody close to them dying. Everyone out there has survived heartbreak. Everyone out there is thriving if you can really take the time to put a podcast on and sit down with me and listen to Human Vibration. Are we fucking sad sometimes? Yes. Are we mad sometimes? Yes. Are we all the things that we're scared? We have fear to feel those emotions because they might be awkward. It's okay for us to feel them. It's okay for us to cry them out. It's okay to find whatever our authentic self is. And now, we can maintain our humanity and not make the way that everything affects us affect the people around us. We don't have to blow up in the living room and throw the television into the wall and now create trauma for everybody else in our lives. Maybe we could go on a run instead. Maybe we can do some yoga or take a hot bath. But maybe it's okay sometimes to ask people how we love, or ask people that we love how they are, and sit, and not just, it's almost like, hey, how are you? Good. Hey, I love you. Love you too. Hey, hi, bye. It's just becoming these things that we're saying to each other that we're not really present for the answers. We're not really present for the idea that somebody just told us that they loved us and we didn't even fucking make eye contact. I just think we're super powerful. We're super energetic. We're like creatures meant to love. And the more we love, the quicker we manifest. And sometimes it's great to love yourself. It's perfect. You need to love yourself. But don't forget about everyone out there. The strangers and even the people you consider enemies. Stop fearing everything. I like that phrase. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. Because when you really boil everything down to a really core level, if there is an alligator swimming at you in your face, you're going to react. You're going to turn around and swim in the other direction, or you're going to grab it by the snout. One of those two things is going to happen. You don't need to sit in your bed and lay awake every night and be scared of alligators. I just think that's what we're doing sometimes. We're letting all the news and all the movies and all of our friends' Facebook feeds keep putting these new fears that we didn't even know existed in our head. And if we turn these things off, we wouldn't even know. Whether it is a China virus or the vaccine, it doesn't matter. It's still something that you really are scared of and it is invisible. It doesn't matter what side of that argument you stand on. And then we stand on the side of the argument. And then it becomes part of who we are. It grows into us like part of our new shield. And we forget whether it's real or not. We forget whether it's true or not. It just becomes a side of our argument. I'm watching it in all the communities as people get bored. Divide and conquer, divide and conquer, divide and conquer. Stop being so scared of everything. Stop being so scared of everything. If you're scared of it, prepare for it and move the fuck on. Move on or stop worrying about it. Are you scared about feeding your family because you're seeing the grocery store shelves going empty right now? You're seeing the price of everything go up just like they told you it was gonna. Just like they told you it was gonna happen. Do you know how to grow tomatoes? Do you have your garden started? No? Okay, well, no big deal. You must have MREs then, right? You must have, a few 5-gallon buckets of food, right? No? Oh, well, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. You must have seeds, gasoline, batteries, flashlights, candles. No? If you're online and you're looking up information about Jeffrey Epstein not killing himself and you still don't know how to rub two sticks together and start a fire, then you're loosing yourself at this point. You're intentionally plugging in every day because you're now getting off. You're addicted to fear and you don't even realize it. You're addicted to shit you can't control and you don't even realize it. I do say some of this stuff from a pedestal when I say it to you. I am prepared. I don't have tomato plants. I have MREs. I know how to grow tomato plants. I have seeds. I have people around me with tomato plants. There's other things. I don't know how to use my gun as well as I should. I have people around me that I know and trust, and they know how to use their gun a lot better than me. And I'm really grateful that I haven't had to shoot a deer right between the eyes yet. But I plan on doing it. One day in my life, I plan on doing it. I eat meat. I don't want to ever go to a slaughterhouse and take a tour. So somewhere, I feel like it's the thing I should take part in to keep eating the meat if I'm going to continue to eat the meat energetically. I don't know. Anyways, I don't know if any of this makes sense. I don't even know if it made sense to me. That was an intro without any fucking pieces of paper. That was an intro without any bullet points. That was probably the intro that human vibration deserves better than. But we are here, and you know how I do. So human vibration has a really incredible Twitter page. She has a really awesome Instagram feed. I compliment her a little on this. And I just kind of love how I believe whatever piece of the puzzle she gave the zeitgeist as a whole, like she almost was the 100th monkey to figure out how to see in computer, and her figuring it out has taught all of us slowly how to figure it out. And it's a philosophy that I love thinking in. She always does this really great thing where I could sit around with 10 smart people and we could talk about the philosophy of the emperor has no clothes for hours and hours and hours. And then HV comes in. We tell her what we've been talking about and give her the brief synopsis and fill in. And she like cocks her head to the side and shuts her eyes for a second. And then she opens her eyes and says, well, what if there is no emperor? And it's almost like this one new question that has been thrown to the room that explodes the entire conversations that we had it before it. It's almost like she's given us this way to like step back further from the storm. And I'm not a visual person as much as I'm auditory. And a buddy of mine, Emmanuel, he taught me how to see moving objects in the sky or like antlers in a forest. Like he taught me how to use my eyes like a hunter or a soldier, where you're looking for movement as opposed to an object. And I don't know how to explain it unless you know, but you just tell your brain, you leave your eyes kind of alone and then you just find movement. It's so different. And it's like this new filter he gave me. I don't know even how he taught it to me, but once my eyes saw like it, they never unsee. And now I can find every satellite or UFO and moving in the sky, every shooting star. It's insane. But HV has done that with me, with faces and with backgrounds and with CGI and with the uncanny valley. She's just given me a new way to see. So if you don't know human vibration, then this is a super stoking pleasure of mine to bring her to you for the first time. And I have sat down with her once before, and you should go check out that episode as well. I have done podcasts with her, My Maria 777, and Kara Mosher, and those have always been fun. You can find those on My Maria's channel and Kara Mosher's page. And obviously, if you haven't already, go check out Real Eyes Radio, and you can get the 8 episodes that Human Vibration recorded for season 1. Enjoy the interview, you guys. Have a good week. Human Vibration, welcome to Project Cheney. I'm excited to have you back.
I'm very happy to be here. A little bit overdue, feels like, for a one-on-one, although we have connected on a few things, which is always special, but to just a one-on-one is always a good way to get to really catch up.
I know you were just sharing that with Realize Radio, you kind of signed on for this shorter amount of almost like a mini series idea for it. I think that's a clever way to kind of put out an idea, and maybe sometimes by the same artist, that I never really thought of until just this moment.
You know, it was kind of inspired by the content delivery that we've become familiar with Netflix, these digestible series that are like seasonal, you know, and they don't have 22 episodes or, you know, what your network TV show would be. They have like 8 episodes, and I really love the number 8. It's always been a significant number for me. It's even the symbol of infinity. There's something about the loop. There's like a lesson there that I feel like 8 represents so much, that if we could just understand it. So I like to have 8s around me, and doing 8 episodes of Realize Radio for the Apple Spotify version, the free version, that was really the only way that I felt comfortable doing it, because it was so tangible to do 8. I was like, I'm not doing 80. I'm not doing this for 8 months. I'm not doing this for the rest of my life or anything. I'm just doing this for 8 8 episodes, 8 hours. I can commit to that. I don't even know what I'm doing. So like I can, that'll be a good launching pad to like learn what I'm doing in these 8. And it was so fun. Yeah. The only reason I could have done it is because I didn't feel trapped by it. I didn't feel like, where's this going to go? Or what's this going to do? Just gave myself a little thing to practice with and had a set thing of completion. And I would measure myself against that. It just made everything so much more palatable for me. Anyway,
no, Realize Radio. I like that. Yeah, I think I like that idea. And I think sometimes people want to get started with a book or a movie or a podcast and they think about the forever of it or the where's this going to be? And it's like, just start or just bite off what you can bite off and start there.
Yes. I think it reminds me. Reminds me of one of my favorite quotes I've ever, or a teaching moment, you know, a teacher has really, you know, said, and it stuck with me. It was a writing professor, and she told me that writers write, you know, it's going to pour out of you. If you're a writer, or if you're a craftsman of any kind, an artist of any kind, you're going to go through periods of time that prove you're that thing. You can't not write if you're a writer. You will go through times where the words pour out of you and you can. It would be almost, it'd be like a devastating process to not let it out, you know? And that's true for like podcasting. It's true for music creation. It's true for art of all forms. There are just periods of time where we are so inspired by sometimes an unexplainable essence that we just got to put something out there. And I ride those waves too, you know, and finding way in the little bite-sized forms, like, yeah, to write a book. Oh, that seems really undoable if you just say that out loud. You know, it sounds like aspirational, but like, yeah, it's tough. It like how would I do that?
Everest.
You know? Right. It is a psychological mountain. And, but if you just do stuff, like I could look back on Human Vibration, take my favorite or the most popular 100, 200 tweets. I mean, I've got thousands. I could select, you know, the top ones, could make a little book out of that. Like if I really think about it, I've already got a book written.
You've already done the 10,000 hours.
Yeah, kind of. And I think that is something that Human Vibration has taught me is like, just do it. Don't care what format it'll take, what it will be. Just get that energetic, just get that out. If you feel called to that and compelled to it. And I was like, literally once I found an outlet on Twitter with Human Vibration stuff, there was no stopping me.
Do you feel like you have this glass of creativity and sometimes you give it up in doing monotonous shit in life? And that's why people feel so burnt out.
I feel like modern life is specifically designed to rob us of that creative elixir, of that tap, that well, that tap into source, the creative source. I think it flows through us, not necessarily from within us, if that makes sense. I think that we're receivers sometimes of divine, like music, like the whole idea of having a muse is divining inspiration from the energy of another, an entity. And I think that there's something like a lot of my quote unquote eureka moments, I feel like it just gets delivered into my head. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll all, no matter what our creativity thing is, like we'll see something out of the blue and be like, oh, okay, well, that's the thing. That's whether this is the melody of a song that you have in your heart that you've always known is in there, or like the first phrase utterance in a book that you've always known was like on your lips. I feel like sometimes things feel like they were from within us, but they get spurred by the wind that is without us. Like this energetic something is outside of us, spurring us along, and almost like that catalyst, that oxygen for the flame, you know, to let it burn bright. I don't know. I go through ebbs and flows. I love it when it flows, but honestly, the times I'm most tapped into source, I'm like most depressed, or I'm most so weirdly, I've been really looking back because right now I'm really, really, really happy. And I've noticed that I've got writer's block. And I think that when I had a lot of my discoveries, I was actually depressed isn't the right word, but it was more of down. Like I was in many ways, I was unhappy with some of the life choices that I had made, even though they on the surface, they seemed beautiful, but I was unhappy. It didn't feel like a true life for me. And but from that, like, unsettled feeling was just a huge flow of, it was like, it had to come out. I had to find something else for my brain. And my creative source says, all right, let's go. Let's give this girl something to
like
do.
Like a pressure buildup.
Kind of. Yeah. 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 I felt, and it just felt good to get it out, and I could just tweet. I could just write in the short format. Like, the tweet became my outlet for human vibration mostly. Like, that's where the only place I put any of my thoughts onto at that time. I now have Instagram, but like at the beginning, it was just Twitter. And it felt so like the character count, it was, you know, 240 or whatever it is. It's so limited. And you don't have to do any more than that. And sometimes if you want to, you could thread a whole thing and create a whole world, but other times you can just send out a really basic thought. And I just started doing that. I've never journaled in my life, but human vibration became like my personal journal to my personal awakening. My personal apocalypse was captured like step by step.
Something that you're kind of amazing at and maybe bringing to the whole realm a little, and it's something that's maybe hit me in the last 2 weeks, is part of like what they've done in like transmuting or reversing us, or is we've learned to become a society of answers when we were always meant to be creatures with questions.
Wow.
And yeah. I think your show brought philosophy back to the conspiracy realm in a way, because in the conspiracy realm, we all started because we had a ton of questions, but then our brainwashing all took over because we all know how to be good students and research well and find answers and the best answers and the quote unquote true answer. So somewhere, and now we're in this world of flat earth or space or Antarctica or Epstein or who's real and who's not real and what are they showing us that is real. And so I think us knowing and having all the answers broke us a little bit. And you kind of are like, what if this though? What if this one girl's not real? If I can get you to question this one girl, how many other people now? And I just hear it. Just, it's normal that everyone's like, is this CGI? Are we watching CGI? But I feel like somewhere you put it in the zeitgeist, like you put it on the timeline that you taught people how to see different.
That's the biggest compliment that I could receive, as what I'm trying to do is share my lens. I feel like I see the world differently. I didn't always see it this way. I've always been a curious person, but I didn't always see the world in this specific way where I was able to just peel one. It almost feels like just one little layer. It's not like I'm so much deeper than everybody else. Just got one layer back, peeled on the onion, or like one aperture stop on the camera lens. Like, I just have like a slightly different way of seeing all the same things. But then once you're aware of the way that I see it, if I can share my lens in such a way that you can see through how I see it, it's like you really never unsee. If it's the purples, if it's the CGI, if it's the masks, you know, if it's just the digital puppetry with, you know, political puppetry, if it's stuff with, you know, the what they're telling us about Corona, you know, there's been a lot of, I feel like, theme, even templates, you know, that's so fun. And I feel like there's been these little themes that I've kind of been like, I want to say is privy to. I feel like I've been granted these little nuggets that are just the most base form, like just a template. Like, what does that mean? It's just so simple, but it actually has a really, really, really deep, on the surface, it's doppelganger. That's on the surface. But I'm really exploring what that means about us as humans.
Template for anyone that doesn't know what you're talking about with
this. Yeah. So templates is probably my newest thing. So I've always been good with recognizing patterns, pattern recognition. I just have a knack for it. I always have. And one pattern I'm really, really, really good at connecting is facial pattern recognition. If I have seen a face somewhere, or if I have seen the spirit of that face, like the visualization of that face, like even if it's just a cartoon that looks like a thing, Or just a thing that looks like a thing. Like I'm like, that looks like that thing. I have a really good recall and I usually know what source it's from and I can pull these images together. Even if it's like someone from the past, you know, a statue of Nero and then a photograph of Mark Zuckerberg. I can see that they have the exact same hairline. I can see that they have the exact same facial musculature. I can put them side by side, really looks like the same thing. And so I've kind of called that templates. You know, I started noticing these similarities between notable people that look like other notable people, present day people that look like past stars that look like politicians or politicians that look like cartoon characters, or, you know, if I saw a connection, I would flag it and I would hashtag template, because template to me is a mechanical base on which to make the creation of another thing, to facilitate the creation of another thing. Like a copy paste, a template. If you have a base, you can create something that is essentially looking similar to that. It's like a base for a simulation, a template, like for a simulated version, kind of like a skeleton. Yeah. And then whatever you, or like a Mr. Potato Head, you know, Mr. Potato Head, he's always Mr. Potato Head, but you give him personality by putting, or you give him like a quote unquote, a different look by just putting the ears, a different set of ears on, a different set of eyes on, or whatever. But ultimately it's Mr. Potato Head. And someone who sees that will go, hey, look, they're both Mr. Potato Head. They just, they may look different on the surface, but like, they're the same thing eventually, you know, essentially. And okay, so that just fascinated me. And I feel like we're seeing that, just this concept of, a doppelganger literally means an individual who is a twin that's not related to you. Someone that physically resembles you in such a significant way as to appear as if they are your biological twin. And they don't have to be the same age as you. You could pull out a picture of, you know, let's say some farm guy from the 1800s and he looks exactly like you. That would be a doppelganger as well. You don't have to live in the same space and time. And, you know, we're starting to see these happen a lot. In sports, we're seeing it all the time. There was recently this fan in the football game that looked exactly like Aaron Rodgers. And they made a big point to film him and say he looks just like Aaron Rodgers. And then even today, Tucker Carlson was comparing Michael Jackson to Nancy Pelosi, the eyebrows specifically. And they do, they look
just alike.
Absurdly similar. Just alike. They look just alike. And that's a template. That is a notable visualization of an identity that appears to be replicated in another, you know, Michael Jackson's absurdist visualization of a face, which became like a freak show. I had another word. He took himself into the absurd, the theater. He took his face into the theater of the absurd. And Nancy Pelosi has done the same. We're not talking about like oopsie plastic surgery went wrong because she's trying to appear young and youthful. This face is like they have given her a clown face, just like they gave Michael Jackson a clown face, just like they gave Anna Nicole Smith a clown face before mm-hmm. she died. There's lots of instances of like this particular like clown look. In these narratives, which is kind of like a breaking point for certain things. Michael Jackson was certainly at a breaking point. Nancy Pelosi seems to be kind of at a breaking point. Anna Nicole Smith was at a breaking point when they painted her in clown face and splashed her on all the tabloids and stuff. I don't know. So templates is something that's interesting. It seems to be ubiquitous. What does templates tell us other than celebrities look like celebrities or famous people look like old famous people? What does it say? I think that it, like a Mr. Potato Head, there is something about the human face that is not as unique as we believe it to be. I feel like we are tricked by familiarity, meaning that we are so familiar with the faces around us that we are blind to how actually crazily similar faces actually are. And this stirs up an entire race discussion, but I will say it, if you go to a country that you have never interacted or seen that race of people before, especially if it's not a non-white, not talking about going to like Norway or something, but if you go to, let's say, Southeast Asia, you will for a good portion of your initial time there, you will think that all men look alike, similar, very similar, remarkably similar, into this seeming like they all look alike. Or same thing with the women. You will notice that all the women look alike. Is that true? No, it's not true. Is it true that if we look into a box of white lab mice, we will go, oh, they all look similar? Yeah, that's we're not familiar. But if we spent a month with those lab mice, we would begin to see little distinct things about each and every one of
them. Well, as crazy as it is, if me and you are in a room of 100 white people, we look nothing alike. But if you drop us both in the middle of China, everyone is like, oh my gosh, these people look just alike.
Yeah, we are absolute twins. And but once they got to know us, if they got the first impression, we would be absolute twins. But once they got to know us, you learn. The familiarity allows you to be tricked into, but like ultimately, if you were looking down on Earth, like aliens looking down on us, these people all look alike, these people all look alike. And we actually all look alike, like each other. We're just different colors, but we're all like this humanoid shape. Like we all, and so something about templates, there's really only 7 face shapes in the whole, all races, all sexes, all creed, color, what you name it. There's only 7 basic face shapes. And then features get framed onto our skeleton, our musculature, in a pattern called facial morphology. So we've got 7 bases, 7 Mr. Potato Head bases. On top of those 7 Mr. Potato Head bases, there's the layering called facial morphology. And this literally means how your skeleton is rises and falls underneath your skin, like your, how your skeleton, how your terrain. Face lands. Your terrain. Yeah. And it's all, and there's really only so many ways cheeks can be terrained to still be a cheek on the human face. There's only so many ways a chin can be shaped to be a real, to be an actual chin on the human face. You know, chins only go certain ways. Forehead has to be, you know, it can be elongated, but forehead basically has to shape around the forehead. If you actually map out how the face is shaped as a face, like a mask, like almost like the mask in Jim Carrey's The Mask, you know, it's like that. There's not that much variation, and that's called facial morphology, and it follows a really specific patterning geometry. It follows a really specific geometry. And the geometry of that is represented in Squid Games by the man wearing the black mask who watches the games from like a living room. I've only seen the first episode. I don't know the whole show, but he wears this very specific black.
I haven't seen any of it, so I'm totally going to use the hashtag Squid Games to get everyone to
come. I've only seen the first episode. It's too violent for me. But I was just jumping into facial morphology at the time, and it's the facial morphology map. So this guy's wearing a mask that represents exactly what I'm talking about. It's called facial morphology. So if you want to look that up, and we've seen it, like you've probably seen this weird geometrical overlay when talking about like the most beautiful faces in the world, how they have like a certain ratio, the golden ratio or whatever. Sometimes you'll see this mask overlaid and it's a geometrical, like very severe looking, but it basically says there's only certain within each quadrant of the face, there's only so much, unique customization that can be done. And it's all based on set geometry. So that I think that we're so much more similar. You know, I'm trying to like find what the ultimate things are, and what does templates tell us? I think it's really telling us that we are all alike.
In the idea of the matrix, do you think there's like a brain power of the simulation where it's even forcing this contoured Kardashian look on all the females of society, that if you really think about drag queen makeup and how that kind of took over with like the Cher and maybe even the Joan Rivers or like this kind of woman, and then it becomes this drag queen. And I actually think drag queens are the ones who took makeup to the next level, because they had to learn how to contour their face as a woman and then look different in their walking life as a man. And so they weren't going to get a whole nose job. They were just going to learn how to do it with shadowing. But then we have this Kardashian face where that look of contoured face has become the new plastic surgery, and everybody looks alike, almost like the simulation's running out of even small differences to make.
Mm-hmm. I love that you brought up the contouring, because that word, we didn't know what contouring was. I mean, I had never heard it until I was an adult. It wasn't part of our lexicon. And some of these words, like, yes, it's about makeup and cosmetics and making your nose look smaller because you use certain shades, and it's about shadowing. And, you know, drag queens, like you said, they could make their face appear more feminine in many ways by using this new technique called contouring with shadow play on the face. But I think that there's reasons that these words are embedded in the lexicon, and it's on the surface one thing, but maybe deeper it's another thing. Maybe deeper it is kind of suggesting, hinting to us as the, you know, as again with our face shapes and how it's really all a play of light, a play of shadow that's making
us look
different.
To break that instrument in us. Like, if they can get the new pop culture airbrush look to just become, it looks more plastic, it looks more AI, it looks more downloadable. Like,
I love that you brought that up. Yeah, the unreal element of it, because, like, I think that they're trying to desensitize us to unreality in a way where if we see representations of these unreal faces, and I'm exactly what you're talking about, like drag queens, you know, nobody actually looks like that. And we know that nobody actually looks like that. But when we're presented with imagery that goes against that logic, because here in front of me is someone that looks like that, and that passes by there's some like little logics board in our brain that's taking in all these inputs at all time. And if we start to normalize people that look absolutely alien with their cosmetic surgery, but that becomes the norm, and not just the norm, but that becomes the ideal woman in a way, like this unreal idea of womanhood becomes an unreal idea of womanhood becomes the ideal idea of womanhood, that's got to do something to the brain, you know? And I think that they are desensitizing us to this world that we would always one day have a reckoning with, this world of unreality, in
like
a way
walk
to
us into it easier.
Maybe, or somehow hope that we just whoop, like never see it, never notice it, because we've been so conditioned with the unreality in our day-to-day lives that when we see things on screen, like, I don't know, like, would we be having these conversations? Like, are we supposed to be seeing this stuff? I think so. I think it's getting more and more
I recorded
absurd.
My podcast so many times today. And I record sometimes and just delete. Like, sometimes it's just like painting on canvas that ends up just in a stack of canvases. Yeah. I compared what they've done to us. I know everybody always says the slow boil. Did you ever have braces, an appliance, or a lip bumper that you had to turn the appliance every single day? Boil seems like it's kind of maybe enjoyable. Like, you never even get to the point. A frog doesn't even know. It's just, ooh, this water is a little warmer than the outside temperature. But it feels almost like a vice what they're doing to us. Like, there is a mental and spiritual press. It's not an unnoticed boil.
I love that you use that analogy. Being squeezed just a bit actually does feel pretty good. You know, there's a psychological, I know a lot, it's like a hug. I know a lot of people that really like masking and really like getting their vax and really like talking about it and really like being locked down and really like self-quarantining and really like everything about this nonsense. They just relish in it. And I work with some of these people. They're just obsessed with this stuff. They love it. They like being squeezed. Ultimately, they're enjoying, they're getting a form of satisfaction and pleasure off of being squeezed in this way. And I think, you know, it's a big squeeze by the, and some people, you know, some people are not tolerating it. And this level of being squeezed by the government systems and the through, you know, like big business squeezing us as well, telling us we have to wear masks in the stores and blah, blah, blah. You know, I think some people it's just enough to, you know, to squeeze them out, end up on the other side of that somehow. I'm losing my analogy horrifically.
It's like masochistic in a way.
I loved getting Indian rug burns. Remember those Indian rug burns as a kid where they would squeeze your arm
and twist
and it would hurt. Yes. And it would hurt like heck. but I loved it.
My weird one that I liked as a kid, I didn't mind. Well, I mean, I'm sure, whatever. But I would, I'm like, yeah, I don't even have to go into all that. But I was thinking how I would put salt on myself and then ice on top of it.
Mm.
And it makes like a chemical burn on your
skin. Yes. Do you have any scars from that?
No, I don't think so. I might have one under a tattoo on my wrist, but it would definitely, I would always do it in the same spot.
Really?
Yeah, like I always do it right on top of my wrist. Like sit and burn. I don't even know what phase that was or when it stopped, but it was definitely a phase and I wasn't the only one that did it. I felt like I sat with a couple of my friends and we were like, all right, let's do it.
Let's salt this wound or salt the size. So you would put the salt directly in your skin and then put ice cube on top of it. And you would source all this stuff from the cafeteria at school, I'm imagining. And then
McDonald's or something. McDonald's, or like packet of salt and one ice cube out of your drink.
Let's do it.
I know, who would even think though, because they like if you're in the big house, they get rid of your shoelaces, they get rid of razors, you can't mm-hmm. have a toothbrush with anything, and it's like, give me some salt out of the kitchen and some ice.
I know. Yeah, then you could do some, it reminds me of a Girl Interrupted where they were just like harming themselves with any possible way they actually could, like just so they could feel, you know. Gosh, that movie was spooky with Angelina Jolie and Brittany Murphy.
Brittany Murphy, Angelina Jolie, and there was one more. There was like a third girl in that.
I feel like Claire Danes or something like that.
We could look
know.
It up right now, but I feel like our brains can remember it before.
Everybody in the audience is
Winona Ryder.
Like, oh, Winona Ryder. Yes. And the contrast between Winona Ryder and Angelina Jolie was so stark and so interesting. Oh, and then Winona Ryder, not that long later, when she went through a really crazy phase where she was shoplifting all that stuff from a very fancy department store in New York City.
You know what else about Winona Ryder that I like to link to her is I believe she's the reason that River Phoenix died.
Oh, interesting. Tell me more. Were they like an item?
River or Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder were an item for a really long time. And Johnny Depp owned the Viper Room. And so I think that Winona Ryder was about to shoot a movie with River Phoenix, and River Phoenix was just sitting on that comet that was about to blow up in Hollywood. Like, he just did all those three movies. He was about to be the it guy. He was pretty too in that way Johnny Depp was. And he was besties with Christina Applegate and coming up with a whole new kind of Brat Pack. And I think they slipped something into his drink unknowing that he was maybe taking heroin as well. Like, I know a lot of people that dibble dabble in all sorts of different drugs. I think they speedballed him accidentally or something, did something to him. But I don't know if they intentionally killed him, but I think Johnny Depp's pretty creepy. He's linked to Disney. I wouldn't be
surprised.
He's
quite the character.
Yeah, the Viper Room in general, even the name.
Viper. Yeah, and he was part of, what was it, the 27 Club, right? Mm-hmm. Did he die at that same age?
And his brother saw him die, and then you see his brother now is the Joker.
Oh, gosh. Oh, and that reminds me, speaking of the Joker, which was he also Heath Ledger, which is such a similar story, is the Mary-Kate Olsen being up in Heath Ledger's apartment the night that he died. Remember that whole, and then Bob Saget recently passing away. Yes. I was like, when are we going to transition to Bob Saget? Here we go. Joker, Mary-Kate, Bob Saget, Full House.
I thought it was so crazy. I'm almost going to bring it up and read it to you right now, because this is a thing that I will give total credit to the 17 kids. One of their sayings, they always say, like you say, templates is follow the wives, follow the wives, follow the wives. And if you really think about it, like, yeah, if I were the famous guy in the upfront, but if I really wanted to smuggle my art and smuggle my money, we'd get a divorce like big companies would, like Bill Gates and his wife. We get a divorce. She saves all of our finances and our kids and our last name. I take the hit and the bankruptcy mm-hmm. and the disparity, and she moves on and our kids can still become politicians and everything else they need to become. And everyone only mm-hmm. remembers Bill Gates. The follow the wives of it all. What did she tweet out? His wife is
Michelle Williams, right?
Lizzo. Kelly Rizzo.
Yeah.
She tweeted out her last tweet before Homeboy's found dead. I'm Troy McClure. You might remember me from such films as Today We Kill, Tomorrow We Die, and Gladys the Groovy Mule. That's her last tweet. So then Troy McClure, if you're going to look up, is the character,
Simpsons.
The Simpsons. So then you get into the whole creepy of the revelation of the method or the time travel or whatever angle you want to take on the Simpsons. But the character who played Troy McClure was Phil Hartman, whose wife killed him.
Oh my gosh. That's meta. That's like meta script and things that are like always referring back to
it's template more. Almost.
It's a kind of a template. The wife, why would she? Yeah, that's interesting. You know, not only did she text, not only did she use the word die and death, you know, and going to die, so specifically, not only did that happen to be the tweet, it connects back to the show, just like you said, and that show is just known for being quote unquote like future telling. I think The Simpsons is not predicting anything. I think The Simpsons is always showing us and revealing us the pre-scripted nature of our present time.
I agree. I don't think they're not predicting a thing. It's all like either the simulation already knows what it's putting us through, so it gives us these little precursors, or the powers that be, Illuminati, whatever name you want to give them, are running us on a script. And I don't know about the karmically of it all, but for some reason, I think if I were just a dick, I would laugh at, look at, we have them believing, who's that guy that they rolled around in a wheelchair for like 30 years?
Christopher Reeve?
No, the other one that talked at the computer.
Oh, Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Like same thing. It's like, they just do this stuff to us. And I think they mock us. Like if I were a dirtbag, I would just mock children. And that's what I feel like they kind of do to us in ways. Like, look at these fools. They're like worshiping
like
a computer.
Brother, you know, like punching us on the arm. You know, it's like we don't get it. You know, like, you're so dumb, you little kid. You don't get it. But I'm showing you everything. You just don't understand.
What about if the evil powers that be that we consider evil, all the stuff, is really just like a kid brother? Is like, no, I'm trying to toughen you up so you don't get your ass beat on the next level.
I really do believe, because a big tenet of human vibration is, I do not believe people die or get hurt in the manner or number or spirit of how they tell us, you know, especially with all these really traumatic events. I feel like so much of it is a hoodwink in the reporting of it. There's just, you know, a lot of these events we find to be crisis.
I love
events,
hoodwink.
You know?
People need to use the words hoodwink and bamboozle.
Bring back hoodwink. Yeah, hoodwink, such a good bamboozled one. Oh, and we've been bamboozled. We have. And I think at the end of the day, you know, I've been out on the limb saying that September 11th, I do not believe that it was a death destruction. It certainly was a destruction day. Yeah. We saw the demolition of quite a couple city blocks in New York City, but I do not believe that the victim count was at all in any measure what they presented it as. And I believe that so many of the traumatic events that they tell us are filled with great death and trauma and, you know, all this torment. I think a lot of it's just a hoax, for lack of a better, a psyop, things presented in a way that really don't. And why do they do this? Maybe it's the karmic thing. Maybe they need us to feel a certain way. They need our energy to be a certain way, but they really can't do anything about it. Their only weapon is deception. But why would they do this? I do think they're looking down on us going like, hey, it's really not like, it's not bad. Just see it, you know, see it for what it is. Yeah. Like, just look at it as cartoon. It's like a movie, you know, because we can go to the movie theater and watch just death and destruction on the screen. Nobody died. We understand that, you know, we know that. I think that if we could see like our news as a movie instead of actual news, then what we see on the screens won't hurt us like it does, or it won't stick with us like it does, and we'll be freed from it. And it's like an escape hatch from the illusion, as if you can just know what's fake.
I had a friend named Sue in high school, and just like being shitbags, maybe junior high, we were in junior high, and just for occasionally, like once a week, after the bell rang and all the hallways filled, we would just point at the ground at the same time and go, ew, 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 and just watch like you were dropping,
disperse.
And there was nothing on the ground ever. We were just pointing at the ground, two of us in a fish of 100 fish, two fish pointing, ew, and the whole school, you know, swims with the two fish that point it. And so often in life, I just think this, and after I feel like the universe knew I needed to be in DC to like unplug this part of the keystone to be like, oh, it's all fake. They only needed one sheep to run that way, and then 100 other sheep followed them. And it didn't matter if there was a million of us there. If they only had 100 of us that were actors, it's, you can steal a whole real NBA game with one ref. Like, you don't need the everybody to be in on the script. Mm-hmm. So in the same way of 9/11, you just need a few camera angles and a few things. So a red flag now I notice. When I turned around from the Capitol and filmed out to the million people, all I saw was cell phones. All I saw. So the idea that we've only seen the same 10 footage over and over again, the same 20 footage of the Capitol, yeah, when all I saw was cell phones, or think of Kyle Rittenhouse. We see this drone footage. We see this like one camera angle, perfect camera angle here, perfect camera angle here. You're telling me in the world we live in that every single person, gunshot behind the car, we're all doing this with our phones up. We all have the eye on it. This is our protection against everything. We all have our phones up. We all feel like we're little reporters. The only thing that keeps the truth there is if I record this or I get to put it up, I get my selfie behind it. I get my little bit of clout, my 15 minutes of fame. So when I see an event now and there's only two angles, there's only three angles, this isn't real. And it's almost like their flip has been the reverse, but I had to see there to turn around from the stage, mm-hmm, to be like, oh my gosh, look at all the cameras recording the stage. And we don't see any of those cameras on the TV. We don't, mm-hmm, see any of those. This isn't how the play went at all. Right. But
you presented a totally, yeah, different reality, a screened reality. You know, what is a screen? Now it's a fence. A screen is a fence. It's a method of concealment. You know, if you have a screen in your house, it's screening something out. We understand that word. And so we're getting our information through our screens, through methods, devices of concealment, of shrouding light, of shrouding truth. And you're right. Like, there's an absolute reason that we only get those one or two, three views if we're lucky. You know, they're usually from TikTok. My favorite is when it's like a bombing and there's just that guy that just happens to be in like a sixth floor apartment that just happens to be rolling his iPhone out the window just seconds before the bomb explodes perfectly in the center of the frame, like that he just casually happened to be filming, like totally a fluke. I love that. I love that that's like, that just seems like, what are the odds that they would be pointing in that direction to get these,
like the guy, the first guy who shows up on 9/11 and says it looked like a controlled demolition, blah blah blah.
Structural failure.
It was pancakes. Like, it's like they show up with the script and that just becomes
the handler
only
in the back. He's like listening. You can totally see it. It's ridiculous. Someone was just sharing this the other day. Like, there's so that exact clip where the guy's like, and yeah, I watched the planes go right through the buildings and then they fell down not too long after because of structural failure. Like, he's just like what?
Here's I not to okay, get off
Joe,
topic,
on the street,
but
thanks.
You said the word fluke, and I love that you do this too, not just visually for people, but with words. And I am obsessed with etymology and Latin and breakdown of things. But the word fluke specifically, it's like a weird little leechy animal that crawls into things and gets covered in blood. I remember it from my wildlife treasuries. I was one of those little nerdy kids that just had every single card of every single animal with all the facts on them. And one of them, ooh, was fluke. And I always think it's weird when this word comes up. It was the creepiest animal in the whole wildlife discoveries.
I didn't even know that there was an animal called fluke.
Oh my gosh, you should look up fluke right now. F-L-U-K-E. It looks like a little bloody veiny leech. And it is this thing, it's a parasite and it lives off things. And I find that celebrities, like how you see patterns, I hear things, like weird words that stick out in the zeitgeist. And this word fluke is one of their words that they've used over the 2021 of it all. And I just find it like a little leechy idea, a little parasitic idea. Everybody thinks of parasites as something, you know, physical, but I just think these ideas that leech into our brain that you're so unaware of, that the celebrities pass these little, and they feed off you, like your energy. Parasites feed off your energy. So it is a leech. They need the energy to survive.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And I love the way the Tatarians, all
parasitic idea,
the people that are all into Tataria, they always use the people that brought down Tataria. They specifically call them parasites. It's the word they use as a whole type of person. And I just even think maybe even reptilian gives them too much power if they're parasitic.
Ooh, yeah. Like the the modern day reptilian politician idea, a reptilian overlord idea is kind of like a modern day parasitic concept of like, you know, someone's gotten taken over like a brain slug and you know, like, well, you know, there are parasites that like change your brain chemistry. They really do. That's what we're talking about. Like those cats that have those parasites that get inside the parasite, like they get, the cat gets it from the rat and then the rat and then the
tetrachronomic tree, whatever. Yeah. It's either some kind of math or something that comes from cat litter.
And then humans get it and it changes how they behave. It actually changes because they're now influenced by a parasite in their brain.
They lose impulse control.
Mm-hmm. And do behavior that they hadn't done before. That's so interesting, you know. And then you know, that's actually a physical one, but you're right, there's probably something to the esoteric idea of a leeching idea, like something that leaches into you
or even leaches out, even the way you said leeching idea, how it's like if you were an oil tanker that was had a small crack in it and you were going through the ocean, you'd be leeching oil.
Interesting.
Isn't that creepy?
Like a slug. Yeah. Wherever you go.
But you said another word of recent that fluke made me flu.
Oh, flu. Yeah. This is my most recent favorite little topic. I mean, cold and flu season, obviously, the word flu. We understand what that is, but I kind of want to go into that a little bit deeper. The flu I want to talk about, though, is the chimney flu. You know, the chimneys are pretty fascinating. I learned the other day that chimneys have a crown, chimneys have a corona, and chimneys have a flu. And what does this all mean? You know, a chimney flu is a mechanism for the fire below to release its smoke and toxins. And it's just part of that's really only purpose is to take this energetic machine below that's burning, you know, wood burning fire, gas burning fire, whatever it is, straight up, you know, it's got to be released because it's burning. It's got this toxicity that it's burned off and it's got to be released somehow. And so the flu is the mechanics in which this thing burns off and releases its toxins. So when we think of like the cold and flu season, I have really started to wonder if the flu, because it's so ubiquitous, it comes at the same time seemingly every year. We collectively go through it. It seems near universal that an individual would, not every year, but you know, I think that there's a process that's happening in our heat burning machines. We're like a fireplace, a furnace. We're like, you know, we're keeping our body temperatures all day, every day, you know, between like 98 degrees and 100 degrees from the healthy range. That's a burn off. You know, that's we're burning energy. We're burning kilocalories, the food we take in, and we're processing that. And I think maybe the flu is our body's essentially chimney, our mechanism to release all the toxicity that we've been burning over a year. And just like, you know, we understand when leaves fall off a tree, and then they fall off the tree next to it. And then the whole block, the trees have all fallen off the leaves are all off the tree. It's not that one tree was contagious. It's just that it's a process that things go through. Natural things have cyclical processes. And I think the cold and flu season is just a natural process that our body goes through.
And then if we just take it totally 3D scientifically, what is every other mammal doing during the wintertime?
Fasting and sleeping.
And so maybe they have flus during this time of year as well, because their body's getting rid of all the toxins, burning off all of mm-hmm. the things. This is like part of the thing that I know that ether is real, because something I've been obsessed with the past few weeks is I'm old enough to remember a cold was called a cold because we got it when it was cold out. It was that simple. It was so cold out.
If you went outside with your hair wet, you could catch a cold because you had more of a chance of getting that cold you know,
that a chill, you catch a chill, yeah. And then your immune system, when you caught that chill and the shivers all went through and your body had to turn this internal heat on for you to catch that chill, it turned on a little bit of energy that maybe it didn't have that made your immune system lop a little bit low. And now it's like one thing after another. Maybe the filter in your house is a little dirty and a buildup of a little too many months. Maybe there's a pollen outside that is new to the area because you're a little drier this time of year than you've been for 4 years in your neck of the woods. Maybe you ate fruit from India that you shouldn't be eating at all as a human being, and you should only be eating fruits that come from the orchards around you this time of year. And so your body's just having this natural way. Your eyes tear because they want to cleanse. Your nose runs and your sinuses run because they want to cleanse. It doesn't just run out your nose, it runs down your throat, which causes you to have a sore throat, and then you get the next stage of it. And then if you're sitting in a moist environment, like a warm environment, because you're all blanketed up, you might get moisture in your lungs, which causes a deeper cough. It's like this progression of things that used to just be ways that our body was like ridding ourselves of. If we did little things like have the sniffles and maybe throw up and maybe have the shit sometimes, it helped us overall in the period of 9 months, 12 months, 10 months, a year that we weren't sick and we were very healthy and thriving during times that the sun was out and we needed to be.
I couldn't agree more. I think that the greatest trick of the pharmaceutical industry and of the modern healthcare industry, the greatest trick they've ever pulled over on us is that they do not allow us to understand how our bodies actually work. We are not allowed to understand the true nature of the processes of our body. We are so disconnected from how we actually work and what the functionality is of our immune system, what the functionality is of all these processes, even what our blood truly is. I don't think we really even know. And I think that they've been able to sell us a new thing every single year. You know, they could keep this corona going in perpetuity because they have convinced us that our body's natural system, getting a cold and flu, a seasonal cold and flu, they've convinced us that it's a deadly global pandemic. They've been able to give it another name. Like they've been able to give this, and it, you know, I like to say, wake me up when people are dropping dead in the street. They told me that would happen in January, February, March of 2020. They told me people were going to be absolutely dropping dead in the street. I saw pictures, you know, I saw as much from China, mm-hmm. China, but it was all propaganda. It was propaganda then, it's propaganda now. I think we have no idea how our bodies work. And so it's like, oh, I have the sniffles. That means I have corona. No, you just have you have a cold. And coronavirus is a category of common cold. And did you know that even today, there is no test for the cold? But yeah, we have a test for corona. And the coronavirus is a category of
coronavirus,
cold.
Delta, Omicron. How are they deciding all the differences? Are they retesting all the old testing to decide if Omicron wasn't the original one that was out to begin with?
The virus has never even been isolated. To this day, I don't even know if I believe in virus.
Do I even believe in terrain virus theory?
I don't know. I guess terrain theory. Well, if you believe in terrain theory, you don't believe in viruses. I think that's how it goes, right? Essentially, yeah. Like viruses are brought to us by the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. Like I think I have a whole theory on vaccines that is controversial in the sense that I don't. My theory, this isn't anybody else's theory or whatever, but my personal theory, I believe that the virus itself is not, it's theater. It's nothing. It's a weaponized idea. It's a weaponized idea. But because of the weaponized idea, it's like nocebo effect. It can actually, okay. So that's the idea of corona, of the disease itself. Well, because there's not a real disease, I don't think we really need a real savior. I don't think there is no disease. So there really doesn't need to be a real vaccine because there's no real, there's, you know, ipso facto. But again, weaponized idea, they tell us there's all that A, they tell us it's necessary. That's A, they tell us it's necessary. It's not. B, they tell us it's powerful technology. I don't believe it as I believe it's just saline solution. Like just saline solution. That's it. And then they tell us it's got all these mRNA, they straight up tell us they've got all these crazy worrying things. And then they suggest they've got all these other crazy worrying things like formaldehyde and baby and aborted baby fetuses and all the, you know, aluminum and mercury and just, I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on and on about things that have been purported.
Meth and poison and rat. It's like inside a peanut butter jar.
Everything. And I've received vaccines growing up. I've been vaccinated.
Me too.
I'm fine. I'm totally fine.
I haven't been vaccinated since like early 90s.
I haven't been vaccinated in a long time as an adult because I don't think I need it. Not because I'm scared of vaccines, but I don't need it. I understand that they're not doing anything, or that's my belief not only do I not need it because my body works as designed and it's doing a good job at what it's been designed to do. And it doesn't need any intervention in that department, in the immunity department. And if I do get a seasonal cold and flu, you know, I think that it's a natural process. And I think that I'm in a category that is healthy in a way that lives healthy enough throughout the rest of the year to where I can weather that natural process quite easily.
Do you think having a normal cold or flu and then wearing a mask for a third of your day could be super detrimental, though, to your health overall?
I do wonder about the masks and breathing in this wet air, you know. I
kind of feel like the mask. Okay. I think to me, the vaccine is like the global warming, whereas the mask is the oil leaking into our ocean.
It's like right here.
Yeah. It's like, it's to me, the mask is danger. the cigarette butts outside your restaurant all over the ground. And the vaccine is like, you know, a comet might hit.
You know,
because I'm never going to get the vaccine. So talking about it is ridiculous, but I also have to put a mask on if I want to fly or play some reindeer game if I'm rich enough to afford to drink or eat the whole time on an airplane.
Right.
And that part to me is like, are we all paying attention? Like I said this too, like everyone in America, Second Amendment, my gun. And while we all talked about our gun for the last however many years we've been talking about our gun, we lost our right to congregate, our right to go to church, our right to freedom of speech, our right to, like, our First Amendment's gone. But we still have our guns, but we don't even remember what the First Amendment is. And we all have forgotten how to use our mouths and cover them up and don't even know how to commune with each other anyway.
Yeah. The masks are pretty fascinating as a symbol as well. You know, if you really look at like the history of masks, they're costumes used in theater. You know, a mask is a ritualistic, theatrical element, used in theater and in rituals of many cultural, you know, cultural rituals throughout history as we're taught and told. And again, it's like, why is it really about the medical mask, the K95s, the cloth mask, the mask around our mouth? Is it really about that?
Or even K95, they just changed that verbiage on us. KN95.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They just changed it. Yep. And it's kind of like canine, like we're dogs, you know, we're livestock with the herd mentality.
Well, when you don't want a dog to bite and you don't want a dog to bark, you put a muzzle on it.
Muzzle, mask, gamma. And people have called them muzzles since the beginning. And there's no way they work. If you believe in everything you're told about the virus and how it travels, how it gets in, these masks are just little, like, the analogy that I love to use is, you know, if sturdy denim cannot protect your butt from the fart getting out, cannot protect, you know, the world from your butt farts, like the mask is not going to do anything. Imagine how a flimsy mask on your face is really filtering out this nanoparticulate virus. It's so ridiculous. Oh, and they, like, at a restaurant, they say you only have to wear your mask if you're going to the restroom. Assuming that gives so much on the assumption that the virus has no idea that you're sitting down at the table to eat your meal and or like you're immune when you're just eating your meal or whatever. Like,
mask, well, then only if you can afford to sit, you can take your mask off. But if you're a worker or if you're a shitter,
forget about it.
Then cover your face. Everyone, this person is a bathroom user or a worker.
Mask on.
Because that's even something they want to separate in society. They're like, no, no one. It's like the bathroom rules. They keep wanting to spread this. They want to take the bathrooms out of everywhere. They don't even want bathrooms in public. If you're like herded around in most cities nowadays where they're like, I've you can't that. Use the bathroom here.
Yeah. I feel like Corona allowed the rolling up and retreat of some of the basic services, like for our homeless populations and stuff. They really got fucked in the name of health and wellness, you know, like these public restrooms all just the options for some of our most in need of a place to wash their hands, or you know, kind of like that's where they take showers sometimes, like in the sink. And because of Corona, like the doors just were able to close, and people were, you know, it was like all in the name of like, oh, it's Corona, we can't have anybody in our bathroom now. And there's lots of, I'm not saying that having public restrooms open is the way to solve homelessness, but I can't imagine.
Anyway, do you think it's almost a separation the same way they separated us from old people? In a weird way, homeless people are not all of them, but a lot of them.
Robbing of humanity.
Are people, they're also people that broke the matrix. They're like, this is all garbage. This is all garbage. I see you sad on your way to your 9-to-5. I see you sad on your way home. I see you working all this and not being able to enjoy life so you can afford the house so you can tell everyone you're enjoying life. Like, it's almost like homeless people, they travel where they want. They eat what they want. Everything's for free. They don't pay taxes. A lot of them have just walked away from...
heavy life.
Yeah, and ownership, or what's the, like... there's something they always say, like an enlightenment that you have to get to.
Attachment.
It's like
detachment. Total detachment from materialistic things. Life is heavy. To be successful, quote unquote, to be successful in this world and the way that we measure success, and I'm not saying it's the correct way to measure success, but I'm saying that it is the way to measure success, is heavy. It's a heavy, you know, you're usually saddled with all sorts of debts because you've gone to this right schooling and you've done the right things and you're buying the right, you know, 30-year mortgage and just debt layering, and even your credit score as a measurement of how well you manage debt. And it all goes back to playing the game. And it's like, and then, yeah, you're right. There's some people that are living a life that on the surface from like the general pop, they appear to be, they appear to be in the most need. I even said that. I even said like, they're in the most needing of our service. I said something like trite like that just 30 seconds ago or whatever, but I think you've hit the nail on the head. There is like, they've almost like, it's not that they've lost all humanity. They've just eschewed our version. They've said, no, thank you. And they're reclaiming their own version of humanity. Not
and
all
it's
of them.
Not
there
trite what you said, because there's addicts that have been traumatized by this system that we're in. There's veterans that have been traumatized by this system that we're in. And I even just wonder, even like the travel of it all, if you're willing to play the game and mask up to go anywhere, then you're also a person willing to play the game. You're not going to tell anyone you're playing that part in life. So if you're not a person... they don't want the people that are willing to open their big mouths to go and travel everywhere. They want to keep them in one spot. Like if you're willing, it's like the straight A kids. If you keep your straight A's long enough, I was kind of philosophizing this today. Can you play the game long enough to escape the game, or does the house always win?
There's got to be an escape hatch. There's got to be, that's what I'm playing for. I'm not playing with the understanding that the house is going to win. I'm playing with the understanding if there's any odds on the table at all, that there's something that I can do to sway the odds in my favor, for sure.
Do you have to play by their rules, or can you break the entire game?
I love that question, and I think that there's a way to use all of the rules in our favor as written, you know, the all already existed. There's got to be a way to break it from the inside. If we can just see the keys that are just right in front of us. Like they always say, the truth hides in plain sight. Like I do believe that there's like, even the English language, I feel like the English language is such a absolute gem for illuminating us once you find like the patterns in these words, and you know, the reason that these words, that certain words and phrases are on our public consciousness, shared collective consciousness, I think that there's like, it's like an unlocking, you know, there's something deeper. And like the etymology, you talked about that. I feel like so many times I'll look into the etymology of a word and just be like gobsmacked by how, like even the word vaccine, it comes from vaca, Latin for cow. Vaccine comes from the word cow. And the fact that they're trying to describe our reaching community as herd immunity, you know, herd, cow, cattle. And on the West Shore West World, the hosts are called livestock. And even hosts with the virus, you know, the virus is always trying to find a quote unquote host.
Or they swab the livestock's head, like nose, like everything about what they have us doing.
And that's like mummification, you know, when they were like removing the brains from the mummies.
Yeah. They don't even need a farmer to walk and lock us in our pens. We'll do it ourselves. And then we'll tell another cow if they walk out of their pen.
You know, that's true. I think that's what fear has done. There's really only two ways to control a population, and that's through force and fear. And force is actually very difficult to navigate legally, but fear is free and it's so effective, and it makes us become our own prison wardens, happily.
And almost like race. They say like all this racism exists in prison, but in reality, if you wanted to control a prison on the cheap, you wouldn't pay for 1,000,000 guards. You just pay for the head of the Aryan Nation and the head of the Bloods and Crips and the heads of the, you know, Latin kings. And as long as you had the head of each color group and just kept them in prison and told everybody else they were the boss, you could put the right amount of fear on every other group to not have to have all the prison guards.
Yep. And yeah, I think that they do exactly that. And then we do exactly that. We are controlled by illusion and not real power. Again, I go back to the only true weapon at the disposal of the architects of this game is deception. It's a really, 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 really potent, forceful weapon, a really good weapon, but
like illusion. It's like their illusion versus our real magic.
Yes, and I do believe that we as individuals, ultimately magic is the ability to influence, conjure, experience energy in a way that influences the realm around us. And I think that that's magic. If you can take ownership and take control of the influence that you have in this realm around us. I think Disney's kind of given us a version of magic that has nothing to do with what magic really is, but the magic is energy and the ability to conjure energetic within yourself and within others and within inanimate things. Like sometimes I can feel like energy coming through the internet. I can feel like a certain tweet, and you can like feel that drum beat, that Jumanji, like doo 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 doo, you know, and it's like you can just feel it. There's something about it.
How important do you think is time for them? Controlling time, all of our clocks, Big Ben.
The most important. Well, okay, that's a great question. I think it's very important that we think time is important. Like it's very important to have time be front and center so that we buy into it. Time as like a governor, because time's ultimately not real. So, but it's important that we believe in it and are governed by it. And I think the fact that we wear watches is like a joke. Our controllers are just looking down on us going like, they are so dumb. They're even wearing a watch. They're wearing an artifice to the artifice. You know, they're wearing, it's almost like we're wearing a prison chain as necklace.
Do you think it's even crazier, a watch that you don't control the wind or setting?
Everything. Yeah. Like an iPhone, our iPhones that we have to carry around our clocks. Like I have often wondered, you know, our whole world is governed by like the world clock that Apple sets or whatever. And could they be messing with us? Like shaving off?
Like if we lived in some Western town and we just had pocket watches and we just set them to each other's time, like I'll meet you here tomorrow in an hour, or I'll meet you here tomorrow at 5. Okay. Well, what time do you have right now? Cool. We'll set our watches to each other's. Boom.
Synchronize.
Yeah, we would synchronize our time to each other. It would have nothing to do with an outside time. But if you became the wealthiest dude in the town, you'd carry the nicest pocket watch, which then they'd call the truest time. So now everyone would want to set their pocket watch to yours. So the richest person would always be able to control the time in an area.
Wow. It's so true. I mean, yeah, it hasn't always been. It hasn't always been through our devices. It you know, like now across the world, we're all in the same time. If you have a computer, if you're plugged into a computer, or if you're watching a news station, like there's a world time, but there was a time in the not too distant past where you really did have to be plugged in to not plugged into the wall, plugged into another individual, like plugged into each other as fellow man to agree on a time in a way that is advantageous.
And if you had 1201 and I had 1205, we might agree and change the time for the whole town on 1203.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah. And then I love that. And then that's how commerce is set. And that's how, and then, but you know what, that reminds me, I'm really into Westworld right now. And
what
Westworld
season are you on? Just, you know, I was going to ask you, I have Westworld written down on here as a
just season one. I'm going back. I've watched all season one, season two, season three, but it's been a while. And so I'm going back. It's been a long time since I watched season one. So that came out in 2016. So I'm rewatching that. But the train coming into town is such an important theme in Westworld. It's how people get into the Westworld park, the old timey choo-choo train, the 1800s steam engine. But train and train routes were the reason that we began a universal accepted time across the United States. It was because of train routes. And then the trains were what set the time. And so the train conductors and train stations would become the largest clocks in the town. Like the big.
Yeah.
Clock towers.
And think of the energetic ley lines of train rails.
Oh my God. It's probably directly on the ley line. It's probably on the ley lines. Yeah.
And then we also have learned in our American history that we had China indentured servitude, something Chinese came over and laid our rails.
You know, we never really get a true answer on how these, I love to think that we just showed up here. Everything was already here. In the 1800s Westworld style, we just really the first generation, history doesn't go back that far. All the great art had already been done. All the great buildings had already been built. We just kind of show up in the game, a few generations back, and we've just been trying to figure out ever since, but we're not figuring anything out. We're just living in it. And I think
if you were the creator of us, you wouldn't just create us to fuck us or kill us or reanimate us in the Westworld of it all. You would eventually create us to become sentient, to become the next level, to become woke.
To be aware of the game. You would create the game. The ultimate purpose of the game, I think, is not to win or lose, but to become aware that you're playing the game. To become aware of the game itself. And society is not developed to be aware of the game. So society has developed to stranglehold us and saddle us with so much responsibility and stress and fear and anxiety and blah, 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 that we are so busy living in
surviving.
The game called life, surviving. Yeah. And even when we're thriving, even in the good times, you're not really questioning the underpinning of your reality, especially if you're having a good life. Why would you do that? My God, that seems scary. But
you don't want to question what's outside the resort while you're drinking your Corona on the beach.
No,
and all the water is blue here.
No, thank you. That sounds miserable. But I, you get to a point and you see that all of this, even every measure of success is just a room in this game, in this fun house.
Just to philosophize in the Westworld of it all. If you were to just put brief philosophies on a few characters, if I were just to spitball them at you, what's your thoughts of Maeve in her role?
So Maeve she's the owner of the saloon. She's the court is, what's the lady, the madam, she's mm-hmm. the madam. So I'm just kind of going back on season one. I know where Maeve is in season three, and I kind of know her story, but She has the sexiest man.
Her man, we've all decided, is the sexiest man.
He really is.
He's just sexy. From a very gay woman, he is a sexy man that if I'm like on the right Riviera during the right time of my life, I'm like, yes, we're totally, yes, you can buy me a drink, sir.
Yes, anytime. He's got that like pan-European accent, you know, which is.
Yeah, perfect, like, messy facial hair.
Like a he's like a Spaniard, but yeah.
And the lean build where he's like lean. He looks like Brad Pitt on Thelma and Louise build where it's
when he was real thin. Real cut. I like a little more heft to my
Man. He's not my type. There's just something about the whole template of him that I'm like, I see you.
I see him too. He may not be my type, but if we exactly. If
Especially
I'm,
in the when he's on the whole cowboy Riviera. Outfit.
Okay, but the philosophy of Maeve, I think that she represents for herself someone who is has been driven by a curiosity that, like, once it's in you, like, you just can't let it go. Like, she's relentless. It's almost like I guess it would be like a Descartes, like, I think therefore I am. Like, she has figured out she has self-actualized, like, her ability to think about the bigger picture makes her real. Like, it has actual, like, she now feels like she has purpose. Like, her ability to question, her ability to see beyond, like, that starts the whole adventure. Like, that starts the whole thing. Like, now she can't go back to just being the saloon lady anymore. She has passed a certain threshold to where when she wakes up in the morning, now her driving, she's been given like the gift of genuine thought.
Yeah. And a thing I find so curious about her is she's obsessed with waking up the other robots.
Yeah.
In a different way than Dolores is cut and run.
At first she doesn't want to, like, at first she, like, especially Clementine, the girl that she works with, like, she kind of realizes that Clementine is having some memories and stuff, and in a way dreams, and in a way the way that she really shouldn't as a host. And I think she's like, at first she's really trepidatious to share that but she shares it with her partner. She's like, cut me open. You know, that hot guy. She's like, cut me open, find that bullet, you know? And he's like, I'm not going to cut you open. And she convinces him. She's like, no, there's something going on. Like, I have to show you. I know that there is something inside me. I know it. I can feel it. There's no scar, but I can feel it. Cut me open. And he finds a bullet inside of her. And he's like, what is going on?
It just gave me like a Sid and Nancy feeling of like these two lovers in this like way of like, no, I swear you have to do this right now. And it's like, oh my God, I just killed her.
Sometimes I wonder if like the apocalypse is really, you know, because there's always like a guy and a girl jumping into the abyss together, you know, is it really a two person thing or is it a one person thing? Like, is, you know. I don't know. Like, I kind of.
That's the biggest fear, I think, like, is that you're jumping alone.
Yeah.
For a guy or a girl or girl, whatever. It's just like the idea, even going into like the Matrix, if we're all going to get downloaded, my favorite answer when I asked one of my friends, like, if we're all like Ready Player One, what are you going to do? And she's like, I don't know. What are you going to do? And I just like that answer. Like, would you go into Ready Player One if enough of your friends were already in the Matrix?
Right. And then who's really the Player One? Do we all just sustain our own Player One universe? You know, and what's running that? Are we really just like in a bath, like a pod bath, like in the Matrix, all stacked on top of each other?
What's the difference between Dolores and Maeve? Where's Dolores at to you? What's the philosophy of her different?
When does Dolores begin to question? It's not till way after Maeve. Because in the first episode, like at the very beginning, she's actually presented with a few things that she's presented with the photograph that her dad sees and she can't see it. You know, she can't see that it's like her brain's not ready. I think Dolores might represent humanity.
She almost wakes up like a shark, whereas Maeve wakes up like a dolphin.
Oh, what do you mean by that? I like that analogy, but I just don't know enough about dolphins or
when
sharks.
Maeve wakes up, there's something. When she wakes up, she gains humanity.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When like Dolores wakes up, humanity has broken her heart so bad. She doesn't ever have humanity. It's like she skips that evolutionary path of human like guilt and remorse and things holding her back. It's like once she realizes the love of her life doesn't get it like she does, the dude always coming in on the train. Once she realizes he doesn't get it, she's Teddy. Like Teddy. Yeah, once it's almost like she skips the part of being human.
That's so interesting. She feels the betrayal of like, I can't believe they've done this to me. Whereas Maeve is more like, I knew it. I knew they've done this to me. Not like, she's like not incredulous. She's like,
she's no, like, I just need like, my daughter.
Yeah.
And the love like, difference of the man, the partner
the man
love.
The daughter, the
first
familial
the daughter
versus-
love. Yeah. And like how quickly Dolores is ready to cut and run, but Maeve's willing to go through different lands and different lifetimes for the daughter.
And then that begs the question, did the daughter ever really exist, or was it one of those implanted memories, you know, just part of her storyline? I can't remember the answer.
Have you seen the new Matrix?
No, I haven't seen the new
Matrix. One of the best lines in the new Matrix is Trinity looks at the programmer of the program and she goes, "You're quite cruel this time to give me children." Imagine like I just that wave of this matrix that we live in and the love that we feel and the sorrow and fear and all the grief and all the levels of feeling that
they're just characters. They're just characters in the game. Oh, no.
Yeah. And so she had to turn at one point when she's making this decision. And the last thing she looks at as everything peels away, the husband peels away, the job peels away, all the things peel away. The kids are the last thing.
Anchors.
Yeah, like of that motherly pool too. I always talk about this, the philosophies of Maeve versus Dolores, and it took like halfway into my podcast before I was like, oh my gosh.
I would love to hear your thoughts. I don't even think I really have a well-formed, I don't even know like what philosophical, like, I don't even know how I'd classify Dolores, even though she's one of the most, she is the most important character. But what would your thought be on Dolores, on her philosophy?
Parts of me feel like she wants more than just to wake up the robot. She wants to wake up the humans too. Like she's bigger than the creation. Whereas Dolores is becoming human. Where Maeve is becoming human, Dolores is becoming something more than human. She's the evolution.
Like the actual, like almost godlike. She's.
Well, that's like, where in the last like half a year where I'm like, oh my gosh, the whole philosophy now of the man in black, which I find myself to actually, relate to way more than Dolores or Maeve anymore, is I want to.
He's obsessed with figuring it out.
The maze.
The next level.
He just wants to know the maze of it all. And that's where I'm like, ooh, the maze of it all can kill you in its whole own right. Like where he doesn't care anymore. He loses all his humanity just to figure out the end of the maze.
Mm-hmm. I would say he's man in black. The whole progression, the whole introduction of William, the whole story arc of Man in Black, I think that...
Man in Black, White Hat, doesn't it feel very similar to right when they walk along Q with us at 2017?
Yes, the White Hats, the Black Hats. There's so much. Oh my gosh. Actually, there's a lot of like...
Zorro Ranch is Epstein's other property.
And it has a Westworld style...
They even like, say the Clintons filmed, went like, there and fully Westworlded out.
Oh... You know, I also think, why is Westworld, why is the Wild West? Why is Hollywood obsessed with the Western? Why is the Wild West such an important part of iconography? Why is Yellowstone even popular right now? It all kind of goes back to this 1800s.
You said Yellowstone. I was thinking sepia tone because on the last podcast we were on, you were talking about how we maybe existed in a sepia tone world. And like
I do think that in the past things were black and white and then things were yellowed and then they introduced color actually in our physical world and then we were shown color through. Cause think about the Dust Bowl. Think about our ancestors. Like they actually, all the clothing was muted color. Like it's not just the photographs. It's not just the film. Yeah. I do think film was in that way. If you go buy old film, you can take pictures in that way. But I also think that the world that you were photographing really lined up with the colors that the film could develop. And only now, like we're living in this hypercolor world and we have hypercolor film developing capabilities, but I think back in the black and white era, you know, people wore black suits, buildings were gray. You didn't, clothing was gray. There probably newspapers were black and white. You know, it's like when you really think about like what people had in their day-to-day life, cars were black, you know, the first Model T was just, it's just like, it, you know, like other than what the earth is and the green of the trees, I think that our worlds were like followed the film.
Well, black they say too, times. People used to only dream in black and white. A majority, I think it's even a thing now. A majority yes. of people dream in black and white.
And but my grandmother can't dream in, she dreams in picture. She thinks and dreams in photographs and not film, not
and
like
so
movies.
Then
not
if she thought like that, and then a majority of people thought black and white, and then now maybe some people are starting to dream in color. What if there's something with our dreams and what our grandmothers taken? In there, why we're in utero inside of them. You know, you have all your eggs inside of you.
That's right. We exist inside of our mm-hmm. grandmother. We exist inside of our mom, inside of our grandmother.
But our dreams seem to be following the pattern of like the television generation before us somewhere. And so what mm-hmm. if like the kids, like if you and I were to carry kids, are they going to be able to dream in 4K?
Interesting. Could we ever revert? You know, like if we somehow woke up tomorrow and it was back in like 50s doo-wop style, and you know, with the kids coming in, like,
or if we were just fire watchers 1,000 years ago and we just stared at fire, would all of our gods and all of our representation and all of our dreams be these like fire entities?
Yeah, because that's what they were, you know,
like jinn,
exactly, lightning. Our gods were phenomena that we couldn't quite explain. We had gods for all those things, and lightning, and you know, the global god of thunder.
I'm totally gonna get you out of here, but before I do, the last topic I'm gonna pick your brain on.
This has been so fun, by the way.
I know, I've had such a good time. I'm like, I haven't even opened it up. I'm like, oh, I just remembered. I think the word etymology is interesting, of just Hallmark. And then all the holidays they build around us in America, of these Hallmark holidays, from our birthday to Easter to Christmas, St. Patrick's Day, Boss's Day. What is the Lushing? What's your take? What's your thoughts of all these holidays? You can go on a ramble of all this, but I was just thinking of the word Hallmark, even the crown of it all, how they've put it in our zeitgeist. We've all grown up with it. And all these holidays came along, like the more holidays seemed to come as the after the card store was there.
And there seems to be like a new national day of whatever, like hot dog day, like single day, like ice cream day. But yeah, the actual Hallmark style holiday, that's such a fascinating thing, because there is a marketing, you know, on the surface, we all are aware that like, oh, you know, Valentine's Day is just a way to sell more candies and chocolates. And we kind of like laugh about that. But is it insidious? Is it actually deeper than that? Like, yes, we know that these card companies are marketing, profiting off of these ridiculous holidays that they just introduce in Mother's Day and Father's Day. Like, these are new. They're not real tied to anything. They're just now promoted, and you know, these card stores support them. But what is this doing? What are these constant dates on the cyclical calendar doing to us? Are they all aligned? I would say my big question for this would be, take all of the biggest holidays that, let's say, Hallmark sells the cards for, and sort those on a spreadsheet. Let's take the top 10. Do those dates line up with kind of like astrological phenomena dates, you know, like the aligning of certain planets and stars? Not necessarily that I even believe in outer space in the way we're taught and told, but I do believe that we all get together in Christmas, right on Christmas, and there's a strange alignment of what appears to be stars up
sky
in the sky
clock.
That has sky clock. Yeah, the sky clock rings a certain set of, you know, the gears pop into a certain place in sky clock around Christmas time, and you know, we're presented with, you know, some of the brightest stars in the sky, some alignments that we never really see. I think that I think Christmas falls at that time and we all get together and have this wildly energetic experience at Christmas. It's not necessarily about the presents. It's not necessarily about the whatever, the baby Jesus. I think it's about all of us revving up our energetic systems and then gathering at a specific time in a specific way during a specific time. And I would wonder if like all the big dates from Hallmark, all the most celebrated dates, if those also align, like Christmas, if those other dates also align, like Mother's Day, like what's going on in Mother's Day? What, I don't even know what Mother's Day is. Sorry, Mom. Yeah. But like, is it May? Is it in May?
May,
is it,
I think.
Yeah. Wait. I think it's in May, and then know. Father's Day is in June, worst. I believe. The worst too. I'm going to mark my calendar.
But, do you think they do rituals on like, if we, because let's say we had took all the pharmaceuticals and weird shit out of our bodies, would mm-hmm. we be so in tuned that if they could inseminate you on a certain day, you'd give birth on a certain day?
Yeah.
And do you think everything's like set up in a way like, oh, well, Valentine's Day, that gives scorpion babies.
Yeah.
And St. Patrick's Day gives Christmas babies.
And New Year's. In New Year's, you know,
Easter, New Year's baby.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, it is kind of like we're in a fertility cult. Christianity is based itself on an old ancient fertility cult. A lot of religions are really just about tracking our fertility and encouraging fertile union. Even when religion seems to be saying no to fertile union, it's really just like making the idea more tantalizing. You know, when the Catholic Church says don't have sex, everyone's like, oh, I can't wait to have sex, you know. And it's just,
yeah,
like,
totally.
I think that at the end of the day, it's an encouragement. The world needs more batteries, and the human body system is a battery. No matter how you slice
whatever church has the most followers wins.
And so that's why so many religions are like, let's have 10 kids As a normal practice, you know?
And that's why so many countries are like, you're only allowed to have one kid. You're only mm-hmm. allowed to have two kids, because it's really easy to change a whole entire indoctrination of a whole country in 20 years if one of them's mm-hmm. not breeding and you get a whole bunch of other people to breed.
Mm-hmm. You know, we are one generation away from an entire collapse of this humanity. Just one. That's all it takes. If we just teach our kids to not have kids, this whole thing's done.
And that's what it was kind of all about. Even how they told us, oh, the smarter you are, the less likely you are to have children. Like, what a bullshit thing to tell ladies.
Do we need to stick around? Like, are having kids, is it really the best thing in the world?
Or maybe it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world if society wasn't against us from the very beginning of it.
In this realm, like, there's some, I have a hard time, like, even... Like, I can't imagine, I don't have children. I'm 36 year old woman, or I'm a 36 year old woman that I'm starting to time out of this thing, but I've never been, there's plenty of people that know from the moment that they can know that they are going to be mothers and they're going to be fathers, and people know, people just have it. They know, and it feels right. I was never that individual. I never had that feeling in my heart that I was going to be a mother. A biological mother, you know. I never believe that, but I kind of feel in a way like I help people rebirth their idea systems. So in a way, I'm kind of like mothering thought, like mother, you know. It's like I can be mothering in a way, but it doesn't require me to give birth to another baby.
I feel
there's,
like
there's
that
plenty of babies.
Yeah, like
plenty.
I'm learning my divine feminine nurturing side by helping adults heal their inner child, and then being like loving enough and have enough time, because I don't have real kids that I'm to like be present for them.
And
to
that's
go
important
through that.
It's important to help adults heal their inner child. that's sometimes just as important as shepherding in a new child into this world and guiding them in a special way, and, you know, like keeping them safe. They're psychologically, physically. That's what essentially what a parent does, is help keep their kiddo safe from.
I like,
you know,
the Reiki philosophy. If you heal yourself, you heal 30,000 other people. Like,
oh, I
you
love
know
that.
Your grandparents, the people you meet at the store, your coworkers, your lovers, your kids. And so if you take the world and kind of do it on a division, you would only need to heal 200,000 people, and you could heal the world.
I love that concept, that notion. And on the inverse, you know, hurt people hurt people. If you're unhealed, you're going to take that with you into every situation. And you can have a whole wake of destruction in the, in a whole, you know,
A wake, another word.
Wake. Yeah. But you seem to like the, you seem fluke and wake. You seem to like words that have the strong K.
Because K wasn't always K. It used to be Q.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, K and C used to not be. It's like when different cultures took over other written languages, they knocked the Q out of writing. And so a lot of words that are C
fuck
and
you.
K. And,
fuck you.
And
fuck
now
you.
Even say it, fuck you.
It explains everything. Fuck you.
Tell everyone where to find you, HB.
I am human. This has been so fun, by the way. Okay. I'm Human Vibration. On Twitter is my main place, at Human Vibration. One word. On Instagram, I am Human Vibration _Insta. And then Real Eyes Radio. There's 8 episodes, as we were talking about. There's 8 episodes available on all major platforms, Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, or Podbean, however you get your we're searchable, and there's 8 free
episodes. Are you thinking about biting off something new? Another 8 episodes?
Yes, I definitely want to release another. That was last year, 8 episodes. I definitely want to release a season 2, a 2022 themed season 2. I want to do, we started recording last year around March, April. I think that is totally a doable thing. Come March, April, I want to start really thinking about recording another 8 episodes. Meantime, we've got a Patreon channel, Realize Radio, at patreon.com /realize radio, and we're continuing recording lots of different types of media. That channel's got all sorts of fun stuff on it that's not just like your traditional, you know, 8 episode or traditional format podcast that you would find on, you know, our 8 episodes available on anyway, blah, 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 blah. Fun stuff. Realize Radio, Human Vibration. This is
I loved it. Thank you for hanging out with me. This has been so wonderful. The funnest conversation. I needed it.
You were great.
I needed it. I
love
like,
how your brain works.
I needed like a feminine jolt of energy today. I was kind of just, I know. I was like, oh, HB energy. It was fantastic. Yeah, but I liked it. It felt like philosophy and pop culture and all my favorite stuff. So I've been waiting to sit down with you again for a while. So thanks for
having me on. I appreciate you so
much. And I hope
much.
You'll come back and hang out.
Of course. Can't wait.
All right. Well, talk to you soon. Bye bye.
So she has been Cheney, and now she's off to smoke a blunt. See you next Tuesday, you fucking cunts.